Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, a partner at PricewaterhouseCoopers, and today's conversation is with Ron Sanders, Chief Human Resource Officer at the Internal Revenue Service. Joining us on our conversation is another PwC partner, Jim Cook.
Thanks, Paul. Ron, in the last segment, you mentioned that the IRS has come up with a balanced scorecard performance measurement system. Can you talk a little bit about that, how that came into being, and what impact that's had on performance appraisals?
Let me, again, sort of rewind back a couple of years. You may recall the hearings that the IRS had before the Senate Finance Committee over alleged taxpayer abuses. And one of the things that I think we found was at the root of that, at least the allegations, was a singular focus on tax law enforcement. And as a part of our restructuring act, Congress said you need to take a more balanced approach. That's certainly consistent with private sector best practice, the notion of a balanced scorecard. And so 2 years ago, we began yet another part of our transformation, that is to institute a balanced measure system, both at the organizational level, and then part of my job has been to link that to individual performance appraisals, particularly with executives and managers. The balanced scorecard is simple: business results, customer satisfaction, employee satisfaction. Business results is fairly obvious, although in the IRS we are prohibited by law from measuring things like tax enforcement results, particularly at the individual level. But there are lots of other quantitative measures of business results, cycle time, quality, et cetera. Customer satisfaction, we've gotten pretty sophisticated, even in the IRS, where you would ask, would you ever have happy customers? Well, we've done some pretty sophisticated surveys to indicate that customers will walk away satisfied from an exchange with the IRS if we treat them professionally, courteously, if somebody clearly explains the tax code to them. No easy thing, by the way. And then employee satisfaction. And we do a census every year asking employees how they feel about how we're doing as leaders and managers. Those are the organizational measures. We have those measures literally down to the group level in almost every case. They don't become real until you link them to individual performance appraisal, and we've tried to do that, particularly with executives and managers. As part of this effort, we created a new executive and managerial appraisal system. It is the appraisal system that drives pay banding decisions. It has two parts. One part is a set of core responsibilities. They are common to all IRS executives and managers. Those core responsibilities include leadership and, guess what, our three balanced measures, responsibilities around employee satisfaction, customer satisfaction, business results, and then a fifth on EEO and diversity. And you know the hypothesis that satisfied employees lead to satisfied customers, lead to business results, and we've made our managers specifically accountable for those measures on the theory that if these are organizational performance metrics, the people who run those organizations should be accountable for them. Now, it is not a strict one-to-one sort of approach. We do have an organization of accountants, and one of the first things they asked is, okay, what sort of score do I need to get on, for example, my employee satisfaction rating in order to get a high rating on my appraisal? And what we've said in the IRS is you got to get behind the numbers. You can't look at, while we measure lots of things, there needs to be judgment between that measurement at the organization level and the application of that measurement to an individual. And that's actually made a lot of people more comfortable with this approach. So all of our executives are held accountable for those organizational measures as part of their common, quote, core responsibilities, unquote. And then each of them has an individualized contract, an annual performance contract. We actually call them performance commitments. We spent a lot of time wrestling with what we would call these responsibilities and commitments were the winners, and they were intended to really signify that that we placed a lot of stock in these. So those performance commitments include a principal one that says that the manager will deliver on his or her program objectives. There are other commitments too. Those commitments, the program objectives, are tied directly to our strategic planning and budgeting process. The core responsibilities are tied directly to our balanced scorecard, so that you have that line of sight sort of linkage between how the organization is doing, how my part of the organization is doing, and how I'm evaluated as an executive or manager.
How long has it taken to roll all this out?
It's been about now, we're going on into our third year from inception to full operation. We instituted this new appraisal system in the fiscal 2000 appraisal cycle, and fiscal 2001 is the second iteration of it. And of course, starting in fiscal 02, we'll be fully pay banded, and the fiscal 2001 performance will be subject to the pay banding rules I described to you earlier. So we've gone from concept, a year under the system without any compensation effect, and now a year under the system in which the results will affect pay.
What are the 10 deadly sins?
That's another product of our Restructuring and Reform Act, and again, it came out of the same Senate Finance Committee hearings on alleged taxpayer abuse. Our Restructuring Act lists 10 things that we are literally forbidden from doing to taxpayers, taxpayer harassment, for example, releasing taxpayer records, things like that. The reason they've acquired the 10 deadly sins label is because by law, employees are fired if they violate them. Only the commissioner can mitigate, and that's a very involved process. And that's caused considerable consternation amongst our employees, particularly to start. One of the things we've taken great care in doing, because our employees' fears were, look, all a taxpayer has to do is allege this, and I'm out of here, I'm gone, I'm fired. There have been lots of allegations, not a huge number, but enough, acknowledge that people know that they're out there, that they know what the law is. But we've been very, I think, careful to tell our employees, look, here are the number of allegations, but actually the number of people who have been terminated under the 10 deadly sins provision have been just a handful. The other thing we've told them is that, look, those 10 deadly sins, while the penalty has been increased, you know, it's sort of a, you know, capital punishment from an employment standpoint, but they're not a single one of those 10 deadly sins were things that employees thought they could do before. They've always been prohibited by our rules of conduct. So there's nothing new in terms of the sins themselves. But the fact is that you can be terminated except under the most limited circumstances decided by the commissioner. We have proposed changes to those 10 deadly sins to the Congress. We're working with the Congress now to allow the commissioner more discretion in that regard.
How have these sins affected employee culture, for example?
Well, as I indicated, there is a considerable concern that these would be literally abused. And there's some indication that, for example, it made employees fearful of taking some of our more extreme actions like liens and seizures. We've established lots of procedures so that employees can get supervisory approval and cover before they take those actions to ensure that they are protected in that regard. And as I said, we've taken great care in investigating 1203 allegations, involving the 10 deadly sins. And at the end of the day, we found that while there may be a fair number of allegations, the actual instances of abuse, employees behaving contrary to those 10 deadly sins have been relatively small. As we've communicated that and we've taken pains to communicate it and communicate it and communicate it, I think we've lowered the concerns somewhat. But as I said, it's something we're still talking to Congress about in terms of further improvements.
You've been granted a number of special authorities by Congress. Could you perhaps give us some insight into what some of those are?
We've already talked about pay banding. There are a number of others, all I think tied back to our restructuring. We basically went to Congress, I was testifying in a different capacity then, and said, if you want us to transform to this degree, it is an historic transformation, we need some additional tools. Pay banding is one. I hope we get a chance to talk about college recruiting because we have something called Category Rating Authority that has really allowed us to streamline the hiring process. We have some authorities, for example, involving so-called critical pay. The commissioner of the IRS can hire 40 people, up to 40 people, and pay them the same salary as the vice president. These are people who are both technical experts and senior leaders from the private sector, or at least from outside the IRS. And I have to tell you, that authority, for example, has been, in my view, one of the keys to the success and progress so far in our transformation, because it's really brought a perspective that, frankly, those of us who've been in government may not have been able to provide, a perspective that, you know, really does say, let's get on with it, let's change this organization at a pace that perhaps wouldn't otherwise be possible. So we have some authorities that other agencies can get if they go to OPM or OMB for approval. We have them now with the commissioner. retirement incentives, buyouts. We can do those ourselves. We don't have to ask anybody's permission. We have some flexibilities that have been tested elsewhere but not adopted for government-wide use, like pay banding and category rating. Category rating was a demonstration project in Department of Agriculture several years ago. And then finally, we have something called streamlined demonstration authority. We can literally waive most of the provisions in the U.S. Code governing civil service by going to OPM, by putting notice in the Federal Register. It's a fairly streamlined process where other agencies, it is much, much more onerous and much, much more limited.
It's a good stopping point. Come back with us after the break when we talk about the human capital crisis. With all the pending retirements, who will be left at the IRS? This is the Business of Government Hour.